Richard and I are really excited about being a part of another consult time of really thinking through how do we re-enter as churches. And Richard, it's been amazing to watch how the Lord has provided so many good leaders to help us think through this time, having good practical wisdom to process. Last week, we did a call with Mark Clifton and William Vanderbloemen and Jeff Surratt, a couple of our state leaders, and they gave just really good pastoral wisdom. I felt like it was good Proverbs for us, you know. And today we're going to move to Ecclesiastes. We're going to get into, all right, let's get to the grit, into the where the rubber meets the road, put the real shoe leather on and move forward. We're also really glad to have a group of our pastors on this call, because after we hear from our three speakers today, we're going to ask some of our pastors to provide some questions out of their context. I think it'll be helpful to be able to bring some good practical application.
Absolutely.
So I want to say again, thank you so much to William Vanderbloemen. First, I appreciate William, you being on this call. He represents the Vanderbloemen Search Group. He's the CEO there, and we're grateful for the way that this ministry, this group has served so many churches in so many ways, consultations, pastor searches. We're also grateful for Mark Clifton. Mark is as the director of replanting for the North American Mission Board. I'm grateful for the way that he is leading the way for the Southern Baptist Convention in helping churches to reclaim the glory in the church by replanting, revitalization. So grateful, Mark, to have you. And then also grateful to have Jeff Surratt. Jeff is a real blessing to us. Jeff has roots right here in Charleston. Again, we provided the background for Jeff just to kind of warm his heart again. Jeff, Seacoast Church, his brother Greg, they helped get that started. And then Jeff's got a ministry of consultation that he's been part of, and we're so grateful for that. Generis is the group that he's with right now, but you can find Jeff in different spots, and you'll get all the websites and details on all that later. But Jeff, thank you again for being a part of this call. We're excited what you bring to the table for us as well in this consultation. And then we have pastors with us too. We have some of our pastors from our Charleston Baptist Association. Grateful to have Stephen Carr. Stephen, wave at us there. He's with Deer Park Church in North Charleston, and he's wearing a Gamecock shirt today, as you can see, proudly boasting of his sports team. No shame there, right, Stephen? You're all in a different team, but yeah, you're all in. Glad to have you there. Tom Brown is with James Island Baptist Church. We're so glad to have Tom with us. Tom's on our administrative team for the association, and Tom's been there at James Island for 33 years, I think, and just going at it and just seeing a church kind of go from revitalization to strength. And then Chad Moore, Pastor Chad Moore at Life Park Church. Chad, grateful to have you on the call today. So amazing to see what God's doing in North Mount Pleasant and how Life Park has just come into a time and season to really reach into that growing population in a thriving, growing church. And so we're grateful. And Chad's our moderator for our association. So grateful to have these pastors from CBA on the call.
And from the Screven Association, we have Randy Harlan. Randy leads our administrative team, and he is at Somerville Baptist. And so we're glad to have Randy. And we have Eric Lefko with us. Eric's at Old Fort Baptist. He's a strong leader in our association, and so we're glad to have him with us. We have Owen Hill from Sand Ridge First Baptist, and Owen is out in a more rural context. And so we wanted to bring him on to talk about that rural context and some of the issues being faced there. We have Clay Jerrigan with Journey Church. And there we have a multi-campus church. And so what does it look like when we have multiple campuses in different communities that we have to talk about reopening? Do we reopen them together or separate, or how does that look? And so we wanted to bring Clay on kind of in that context.
Well, today is about push and play here. So I'm going to go right to William and say, William, speak some words on the pragmatics as churches begin to think about driving this new manual stick shift car from automatic and trying to navigate some different gauges. So speak to us a little bit about what counsel that you're giving for churches today.
Well, thanks for having me. I think I'll probably sound a little bit like a broken record if you were on the call last week, but I think that people being able to speak to their local context is going to be more important than it has been in my lifetime. We've all followed great leaders like Rick Warren and people who've been pace setters during a church growth era and how we reach folks who are far from God. And a lot of us, I've done it, have downloaded one of their sermons and said, I'm preaching one of Rick's sermons today, and here we go. You know, it's like, that's just how it's going. But I think right now we're moving to a place where everybody in America has figured out how to Netflix the best preaching in the country. Like, anybody can go watch Steve Furtick if they want. Anybody can go watch Craig Rochelle if they want. And they're all great. And they're supplemental to our life in our local church. But I think the role of the pastor of a local church is going to become more local than ever. And I say that, like, if you can really speak to the heart of where you're from, it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, I'm sitting here, y'all saw me looking sideways. So I'm like, are you serious? Is that Chad Moore? I know Chad Moore. Chad Moore's from Lenore. Like, we are both from this town near where Deliverance was filmed. Like, we are in rural America. And to think that two guys from Lenore are somehow helping church leaders. Come on, Chad, tell me. Somebody's going, Lord help us, if they can do it, anybody can. So, but I really think that that local context, like, and what does that mean? That means between now and the time you're able to meet, which for some people is right now. Like, you know, if you're out in Due West, South Carolina, you can probably meet right now. If you're in a big metropolitan area, maybe not. But whatever time you've got right now, study your community. What's going on right here, right now? Talk to the doctors and nurses in your community. What's going on right here, right now? And get a handle on the pulse so you can say, God did this in our community. And here's what it has to do with our life for here and now. And there's no way anybody can Netflix that. And there's no value that you can place on that. And I don't know, having worked with the best pastors in the world, I don't know any great pastor who doesn't have a great heart for their local context. So I'd say if you're not in love with your community, now's the time to really think through that. Second thing, and just three quick things. Second thing, children's ministry. Our webinar on how to reopen the church from children's ministry, it's at reopeningchurch.com, and you can find it if you scroll down. We had some of the best children's pastors in the country, and the advice they gave was amazing. And one of the best pieces of advice that I heard on the call last week from Jeff, and that is get a local nurse or a local doctor involved to see if your place is clean and ready, and let them help you determine what needs to be done. Third thing I'd say is if you're still like me, it looks like I'm in a studio. I'm in my kid's bunk room with a fancy tarp in front of me. But if you're like me and you've got some time before you can get out, this is time. You know, Jesus went into quarantine. We're told right after he was baptized, the Holy Spirit led him into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights to fast and to pray. And then he was tempted. But God said, I'm going to give you, Jesus, some time to do interior work before an external surge of ministry. And I think that's what we're facing. I think there's an external surge of ministry coming. People hungry for the word, people curious about spiritual things. And golly, what a gift God's given us for time to seek him, to pray, to up your prayer times to 3 and 4 different intervals during the day, and to do the internal work that Jesus did before he had an external surge. So that's just a couple quick thoughts to kick us off today.
That's great. Thank you, William. Thank you. Mark, share with us what's on your mind today. There we go.
I gotta go. There we go. There's so many nuts and bolts. As a pastor, I'm overwhelmed by the decisions that we have to make constantly. And these are decisions we've never made before. So there's no template for them anywhere. A lot of times my father was a pastor for 50 years and, you know, when dealing with people, dealing with conflict, dealing with things, I'd often think, how would my dad handle that? So I'm trying to figure out how my dad would handle this. And there's no template. There wasn't anything like this in his time, remotely like it. And so, and again, just understanding your local context, especially as you come back public for gathered worship, understanding what's expected of gathering in your local context. You know, I'm in Greater Kansas City, Missouri. Like I said, we have two states, 7 or 8 counties, 30 municipalities, and almost in many ways, different parts of the counties, different parts of the states, the expectations of what we should do are very different. So you're gonna have to really tune into that. But you know, if you're like me, you've been online, you've looked at the really good pragmatic things. Like, I mean, let's be honest, man, get on Amazon or something and buy a lot of those touchless hand sanitizer things, man. You need to have those everywhere. Be careful. You know, I think I like the idea of having the doors open and not having people happen to open the doors. I like the idea of perhaps not having bulletins for a while, so you're not passing things out. I mean, there's just all these little details like that you have to think about that you never really had to think about before. And, you know, how do you manage social distancing? If you have a choir, for example, I mean, one of the things many people want to do is they want to get back and sing together in the choir. Well, how do you manage? How do you go 6 feet apart and hear each other? I mean, so when are you going to have a choir again? All those kinds of things. So I think the one thing we all know is that at least for the first few weeks, the meet and greet and hug and say hi to a new neighbor is probably over. And for someone like me, that's cool. I never liked that anyway. I always felt awkward. I'm just a bit of an introvert, and that was always, I never looked forward to that. So maybe that's gone for a while. But yeah, there's so many, as I said, pragmatic things about even things like the doors and how many people in the restrooms. If you have relatively small restrooms, you put a sign out front that says, you know, please only one at a time. All that. We talked last week about whatever it is you and your leadership decide to do, kind of whatever processes you have in these early weeks, you can't communicate it enough, you know, over communicate it in every possible way through your media, through your all kinds of ways. And then I'm going to put large signs by all the doors that say, you know, basically this is what we're doing and why we're doing it, so people know what the expectations are. And then we can talk about this maybe later in the podcast, but, or whatever this thing is, the Zoomcast, but Romans 14, I mean, where Paul talks about conscience, you know, what's right for one person's not right for another. I think we're going to be living that, because you're going to have some people that look at you as a pastor and go, man, you're buckling under. We need to get back. This is all nothing. You're going to have other people who say, you know what, it's going to come back again, and we're not being good citizens, and we're not, I mean, and we're going to really have to lean into this as pastors and leaders and get ahead of it. And we're going to have to navigate a lot of very diverse opinion that are very passionate. And as I said the other day, you're probably not going to change somebody's mind. They've been listening to a certain stream of media and in a certain stream of social media on whichever sides they're on. And you're probably not going to change their minds on this. What you have to do is help them see there's a greater good. And that is that we're going to come together. And no one has the right answer. None of us really know. But for the next few weeks, this is what your leadership has decided to do. And as I said, you don't play this card very often, because you do, you'll lose it. But every now and then you need to pull it. And I have seen my dad do this in the past. You need to pull out this one card that says, because I'm your pastor, I need you to agree with me and do this. Now, frankly, if you don't have a lot of account in the bank, in the relationship bank, you're going to find that out real quick right now. But if you do have some account in the relationship bank, I think this is the time maybe to use it and say, look, I know we're going to have disagreement about how we do children's ministry, about how we do music, about how we do everything. But we've got to come together in the next few weeks, and we've got to decide this is how we're going to move. So as your pastor, will you just help me, and let's make this work? I think sometimes we're just going to have to be that real. And you're going to have to listen to people. And if they want to argue with you, don't argue with them, but let them talk to you about their opinions on this. And validate. Those are valid opinions, but we're still going to do it this way. I just think pastoral skill and giftedness, you're going to have to really lean into that in the next few weeks. Otherwise, and look, I've spent most of my life with normative sized churches. I'm a member of a mega church, which is kind of unusual, but I love it. I love the church I go to. I'm a member there for a lot of reasons. I love the young pastor. They're very committed to planting churches. They also have a Saturday night service. So my wife and I get to go and be regular church members on Saturday night before I go do my stuff on Sunday morning. But in a mega church situation, people are a little more used to following just the leadership's decision. It's not, I'm saying always, but a little more. But I live in the normative sized churches, right? I mean, I just was Wednesday night. I was elected pastor of a church with three members, literally three, and only two of them showed up to vote. That's a true story. But I spent most of my life in churches of under 50 or under 75 or under 100. In those churches, everybody's opinion matters, right? Everybody has a sense of being heard. And I think some of the disruption is going to be in the more normative sized churches, where we sort of have a general idea that decisions are made by consensus. And you can't make this kind of decision by consensus.
That's good. Thank you, Mark, for that. That's great. Jeff, jump in there with us.
Yeah, thanks for being, love to be there. I love being on with you guys. I love seeing some of my heroes from the Lowcountry Chad, you and I had an incredible experience going to see a basketball game up in North Carolina. That was a blast. And a lot of you guys are just heroes. I know your church as well. I'll agree with Mark. One of the only good things of moving away from the South a few years ago was nobody in Colorado hugs anybody. So that, as an introvert, that was such a good thing. Just a couple of things I'd throw out. I love what William and Mark both shared. One of the things is kind of tagging on what we said last week is I would say as you're opening up, don't pretend or try to be an expert in what you're not an expert in. And one of the things that's fun for me right now is in a lot of areas there aren't any experts. I don't think anyone on this call has ever been through a pandemic before. So we're all improvising. We're all making it up as we go. Now there's two ways to improvise. There's one to just go off on your own and say, hey, I'll just figure all this out and we're going to do it our way. And you know, this is what I think we ought to do. So let's go do it. Another way to improvise is to collaborate and to say, you know what, I'm not an expert. I've got some ideas, I think, but let's get together. Let's reason together. Let's figure this out. William mentioned something I mentioned last week on the sanitation side. I'd get medical people to help me with that. Hey, as we're starting to gather together, let's not pretend that churches are the only ones trying to figure out how to have medium-sized or larger-sized groups. Let's sit down with restaurant owners as they're trying to figure it out. Let's sit down with school leaders as they're thinking about the fall. There's a lot of people in our communities that are trying to figure out the same thing we're trying to figure out. And rather than us just running out and doing it the way we think is the right way, let's sit down together and we'll have some wisdom they don't have. They'll have wisdom we don't have. And that does a couple things. We learn from each other, but it also says, hey, we are a part of this community. We are not just this outlier out here doing our own thing. We are a part of the community. And that's kind of a second thing I talked about last week a little bit, but just to circle back is as we're reopening, gang, let's keep in mind the others that aren't in our church. And I think a couple of different layers of that. One, I love what we're doing right here, a bunch of Low Country pastors getting together, thinking about it together. Let's think about the other churches in our community. What do my decisions, how do they impact the other churches? Either I'm going to open before they are, how does that impact them? Or I'm not going to open yet, how does that impact them? I'm not saying you let anyone else make those decisions for you, but you have to have, I think, you should be sitting down in conversations with other pastors going, what are you doing? When are you opening? How are you rolling it out? And let's just think about what do my decisions, how they impact the others? And not just the other churches, though. We talked about this last week, but our decisions are being watched very closely by those who do not attend our churches. They're being watched very closely by people who don't attend church at all. So we're getting a lot of pressure from the people inside our congregation, and we need to listen to that. And we need to respond to that. I love what Mark said. People in your congregation are going to be all over the board on this. You may have what's interesting is you may have a congregation that's politically leans hard toward one side, but you'll find in this particular issue, they're going to be all over the board about it. And you need to listen to it. But we also need to be listening to those who do not attend church at all. And how do our decisions land with them? How do they impact them? Does it feel like to those who don't attend church that we're saying, hey, all we care about is getting together. We miss each other. We want to hang out. We don't care about you guys. We wouldn't say that, but does it feel that way? I think what I would do, and I think one of the things I'm enjoying is connecting with church leaders in this season, rather than me coming in and saying, hey, I'm the expert, I'm able to come in and say, hey, let's build frameworks about how to think about these things, and then let's think about them together. And one of the frameworks we need to look at is how will this decision today look in 2 years from now? What are the things that could go right or wrong that 2 years from now we look back and go, man, I'm glad we did that. Or 2 years, we look back and go, ah, bad decision. And the last thing I would say, and William hit on this too, is however we gather, we have to make it a win for families. And what happens a lot of times is a lot of times our leadership is male. A lot of times our leadership can be middle-aged or older. And so, and that's stereotypical. Clay, it'd probably be a little different for you. Journey's a little bit younger church. For some of us, it'd be a little bit older, you know, some of that kind of things. But leadership often won't have small kids in the home. And so we'll make decisions that sound good and work good for those of us in our 40s and 50s, But for families in their 20s and 30s that have small kids in the home, it doesn't work at all. So we really have to think through, how does gathering work for a family? And what I was on the phone with a large church in Florida yesterday, and they're working through this. And my recommendation for them is, if you can, let's build multiple models. Let's say, you know, in this site or this service, here's how we handle family ministry. In this service, we handle it a little differently. In this service, we handle it differently. And one, that gives us laboratories to think through, and all of us are going to, many of us will have multiple services, right? Because of social distancing. It gives us laboratories to think through, and it also gives our families options to say, you know what, I'm really uncomfortable putting my kids in any kind of children's ministry. That's fine. At our 10 o'clock service, we gear it more toward families having their kids with them. And it's an opportunity. We're not trying to be consumer centric. We're trying to make sure that what we're doing puts all barriers out of the way so people can hear the gospel, respond to the gospel, worship to God, and be drawn together as a family.
Wow. Thank you, Jeff, for sharing that. And so grateful again for the three of you just to give us some of your wisdom as you work with so many different leaders all around the country and thinking through so many angles. It's an interesting time that we're in, like you said, Jeff, that we're all in this together. It's something we're all inexperienced at this, but the way that we have to nuance this time and season, the way we have to be diverse, I think, William, you said last week, really to be like the sons of Issachar that just know the times and know how to navigate through them. The Spirit of God is not withholding wisdom and grace from us to be able to do it. We know that. And the other thing is that I think what I heard all three of you say is that you really believe that collaboration is important. This is not a time to be a lone ranger, an independent thinker to say, hey, watch me, what I can do. This is a, hey, we're all in this together, either reaching out to people outside of your church, inside of your church, but then together collaboratively. So thank you for helping to frame this up. I want to turn to our pastors now because we want to hear from you and the questions that you have that would help us, again, contextualize, because we have good representation across the board here today. So Pastor Chad, would you lead us off maybe with a question that we can start with?
Yeah, so Jeff, I really appreciate you talking about collaboration with other churches and how your decisions could have a positive or a negative effect on other churches. This was very important to me just in the last couple of days. Being on the call this morning with Sean Wood and Greg and some of the other guys, they actually were wanting to start earlier than what we were wanting to start. And it really has to do with our service model. We have two buildings that are smaller that we use for worship services, and we've turned one of those buildings into more of a studio because I didn't realize what it was going to take to have online services at a greater level than what we were doing. So you take away that building, which we have three services on Sunday morning. You go into the other building that we have three services on Sunday morning. So that's six services. So now we're down to one building to keep our online presence. I just felt like we needed to start worship services more in August. But after talking to those guys, they wanted it to be more of a unified front so that there was no church getting more scrutiny than the other. So we decided to start in June on the 7th with an outdoor service because we don't have the room in our current, you know, model to do that. So I'm very excited about on June the 7th, we're going to have multiple services outside. People can do their own social distancing. So I just wonder maybe what Jeff, some of you guys that have some experience, Mark or William, what do you think about outside services?
I love outside services. I don't know if you guys have been watching the trend of drive-in services, but we've been doing a few of those at our church. We're going to do our first weekend one coming up. And I love it. I love it. I think, Chad, the things you're thinking through are the right things. You have to think through. I'd be a little concerned if I just said, hey, everybody will figure out their own social distancing. I'd probably have some very, not strict isn't the word I'm looking for, very obvious ways to know that you are social distance. But I love the idea. I think with the weather and everything else, it's a great idea. Chad, are you going to broadcast on speakers or are you going to do it over FM radios? Are people going to be in their cars or are they going to be out on lawn chairs? How are you guys going to do it?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of planning on that. But what we're thinking is do what's best for you. So if you want to turn your car around and have like a tailgate where you're sitting on the back, you're welcome to do that. If you want to listen inside the car, if you want to get outside the car and kind of have a blanket where your kids have some defined spaces, we haven't gotten that far in our planning yet, but we really want it to be more of just, you know, whatever's best for you with some of those stricter guidelines. One of the things I got from the call this morning was to empower a medical task force that actually looks at all of your procedures in like Costco or some of these places where you have we have some outdoor bathrooms because we have a park, about putting cones out, you know, where people would stand 6 feet apart. What's the cleaning process, you know, in between things. So actually that call was incredibly helpful. You talk about collaborating, listening. I got, you know, 5 ideas this morning from that call. So yeah, we're probably going to let people do what they want to do and try to limit the size of those, maybe have multiple services and just say to people, would you mind, you know, doing a little bit of a ticketing process, you know, so that we can get some gauge of how many people are there. We'll try and kind of see how it goes. But I appreciate the safety procedures and making sure we have a real plan for that so that people feel safe.
Again, the benefit of today, we've got different contexts, different situations in churches. So Chad's representing one of those. Let's hear from one of our other pastors. A question you can ask William, Mark, or Jeff.
Hi, I'll jump in there. And this is not really related to either of the three of you, but maybe a little group wisdom, and especially in Texas and Kansas. I think I was on the same site maybe Chad was earlier today. And of course, we know here in the low country of South Carolina, the testing has really been ramped up for the virus. The medical folks are really trying to do more tests. So the question there is, do you see any holes, or if they were to say, okay, a church here and there in the area would be a good place to host the site testing, do you see any problems with that, or do you see that as being possibly a really good ministry avenue?
I think one of the first places I saw do this was Chris Hodges, and anytime he's the first one with an idea, I just do whatever he's doing. He's pretty smart. So Hodges opened the main campus, the Grants Mill campus, for testing a month ago, and did it as an outreach. I've heard nothing but positives back from them. Of course, everything they do, they do with excellence. I think if you're going to do that, Randy, I question would be, is that totally outsourced, or does it involve volunteers? Because one of the places I'm hearing a crunch, and this is to circle back to opening back up, is what are pastors doing right now to train their volunteers that are going to run Sunday morning? Whether that's children's ministry, I mean, you may have volunteers that are in at-risk groups. Sorry, I have asthma, I can't do that. So there's like a vetting of volunteers, and then a training of volunteers that needs to happen online right now, not just 2 days before we open, so that you can get that collaboration. And so if the COVID testing center somehow drained your volunteers, I hate to say this, but I might get a little selfish and say, no, I need to save my volunteers for opening back up. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Great.
Hey, Randy, one thing about what William said with Chris there in Birmingham, you need to make sure there's enough tests. You need to know before you go in, they're adequately supplied with tests and volunteers, all those kinds of things. I know early on with Church of the Highlands, there weren't enough tests, and it was a bad thing. People were coming, and you don't want that on your church. So you just need to make sure you know what's up.
Okay. Thank you.
Owen, can we maybe hear from you in a more rural context of some of the things you're hearing, and maybe some of the things that even some of the guys in your cluster, I know you've had conversations with them. So what are some things you're wanting to consider in that rural context?
I want to say thanks to all of you guys for your tremendous advice. We really appreciate it. And I think together we're definitely better. And so, but I think for us, we have a couple of concerns. You know, I was in manufacturing for 28 years and never thought I'd say the word PPE in church. And now here we are, and how do we get that stuff, right? And I think secondly, for us, one of the big concerns I have is, you know, small rules are very personal. And one of the funny things we say is, come to Sand Ridge, you won't connect with a card, you'll connect with a person. And now all of a sudden, I'm forced to do this impersonal environment. And how do we cope with that? You know, our guys are huggers and lovers, and everybody wants to see each other. And so we're trying to figure out, how can we have church again in this new way?
I would avoid singing "He Touched Me" for a while.
Absolutely.
Well done. Mark, what do you have to say about that? I know you're dealing with a lot
of people. I'm just thinking through it. You know, I agree with him so much. You know, the normative sized churches are all very relational, incredibly relational. That's the lane they run in. We know everybody. Everybody knows everybody's name. We know where we all sit. There's just a high capacity for that. And in a rural setting, I grew up in rural churches. And yeah, it's just going to seem so foreign. I'm thinking, you know, going to the mega church that I attend, it's not going to seem terribly foreign for me not to hug everybody there on Saturday night. But growing up in a rural church, it's going to seem like we're walking around with one shoe on, that something's not right here. And so how do you compensate for that is a really good question. And I'm gonna think about that for a while. You know, I mean, we just can't do it. That's obvious. But what's the compensation for that is really a challenge, to be frank about it. You know, one of the guys I work with, you know, with the children, you know, they're rather than having children's church, they're at one time in the service going to have the children stand up on the chairs and wave their hands, and they're going to acknowledge all the kids that are in church today and have a special word just for the kids and let everybody wave at the kids so the kids feel connected. I thought that was kind of a cool idea in a normative sized church. But yeah, I just think you're going to have to, I don't know. How's that? You had me come on this video and I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I'm thinking, man, there's nothing to take the place of hugging somebody. There's nothing to take the place of a handshake. There's just nothing. It's just not there. And sometimes when you're in the same small church building that you've been in for 30 years and you're seeing these people, it's like, but I can't cross the aisle. I can't go sit with you. I can't. It's going to make it even more painful in many ways than it is right now.
I agree. And my church I pastored, first church I pastored, there were 11 people in it and I got 9 votes for me. And then one of the people, one person abstained, and 3 months later she told me she was quitting because she didn't feel like she could vote when they elected me because she didn't know me well enough. So, I have been in the rural, it was in Texas. I've been in the rural context. So I can relate. I think part of it though, for all of us, is it's this principle in life that it's harder to, when we take something away, we should give something back. Right. So it's really hard to take something away. So I would be thinking, and I know it's hard, Mark, I agree. It's not a one-to-one, but I'd be thinking hard about what fun thing could we add in? And let's make it as goofy as possible. Let's just make it, and let's make fun of it. I'd shoot a little bad video ahead of time and say, so we can't hug, here's what we're going to do. And I would just make fun of it, foot bump, you know, whatever it is. We did high fives with feet for a while and I would lean into, love to hug. We know we can't do that. So let's do this other thing and champion it. And I think people are going to understand. I mean, I don't know if you guys, where you're at in your states, but they've opened it up so we can go over to other people's houses now in Colorado. And we went over to our best friend's house and we couldn't hug. We couldn't shake hands. It was awkward. We laughed about it and it was a great evening. I mean, it was a blast. And I think that's what your people are going to experience. They'll be like, oh, I want to, but this is so much fun being together.
I guess one of the things I would do is I would emphasize a lot of singing because we've missed some group singing. And so, you know, that's one thing I think in a rural church setting, especially, maybe we can't hug and can't stand real close together, but we can at least sing more together and so do that. But yeah, I'm going to think through that a little bit.
My singing makes people not want to get near me. So that, you know, there's that.
It's good.
question for the guys. I am actually so excited about evangelism right now because a lot of people have been through a lot of hard things. And while there are certainly people who are critiquing the church, saying, don't you care about people? Why are you regathering? There are a lot of people, too, I think, that have been shaken through this. And there's a real opportunity to speak hope and life and confidence and foundation. So while we're trying to figure out how do we make services smaller or try to have more services for your current people, what evangelistic opportunities do you see in light of trying to gather people? Because I don't want to just take care of our people. I want our people to invite their friends.
All right. The Presbyterian spoke up first. It's all about evangelism. Oh, no.
Thanks, William. Thanks for bringing the levity today, man. You've got the levity today.
Well, here's the thing. I think levity, I do think the film and the quirky video and all that, I think it just lean into it, make light of it. But the other thing I think is people are more serious than they've ever been. I got a 26-year-old who seriously was asking me, so explain to me this bear market thing. Like his whole life, he's never heard what a bear market is. And I got a 10-year-old that's like, so we've never really prayed that God take a disease away from the country. Like there's a whole, so I was on a webinar yesterday with Al Mohler, who's president at Southern. And, you know, he said, to get ready for this, he's remembering when he talked to his predecessor, who was the president of Southern right after World War II. He said, well, what'd you notice that was different? He said, well, when the students came back after World War II, they were much more serious. There was a gravitas, there was a heaviness, like they'd seen more life than most of the people. And I think as pastors, it might be on us. And Chad, I've been out of the pulpit for a few years, but I think it might be on us to lean a little heavy when it's time to be heavy. I think people have been looking at life and death in the face, and you know, millennials who I love them, but a little bit of entitlement. I bet some of that's been knocked off a little bit. Like everything's a little more temporary than we thought it was. We always tell everybody with succession, every pastor's, it's all interim work. You're all interim pastors, however you count it. Well, I think everybody's realizing we're all interim here on earth. And there's just a heaviness that I think you can lean into like maybe never before in this generation.
I agree, William. I absolutely do. We at the same time, Chad, I think with evangelism, I think I would get super creative about the invite because the invite is very different now. And I think the invite can be much easier than it used to be. The invite used to be the only way you can do church is you got to come and sit in this room with me and we're going to sing a bunch of songs you've never heard of. And then a guy's going to talk at you for 45 minutes and you're going to have to hug a bunch of people you've never met before. And then we're going to drink juice and eat crackers, but you can't have any of it. You know, I mean, and then we're going to take an 8-year-old and dunk them underwater and then we're going to cheer about it. And that's a tough invite any way you look at it. Now the invite's pretty easy. Like when you do your open air deal, hey, we're going to do a picnic thing with my church. I'd love for you to come. We'll bring the picnic. We'll distance whatever we need to do. It'll be a blast. We'll have fun. I'm sure you will, Chad. You want to make sure to continue to offer online options, you know, even when you're having in-person stuff. And man, what an easy invite. Hey, why don't you guys come over for lunch Sunday? We're able to, you know, we can hang out with each other and let's watch this 30, 45 minute thing with my church and we'll talk about it afterwards. To me, that's an easier invite. So I think evangelism, if we help our people learn new ways to invite, I think there's tremendous opportunity in this season.
Yeah, I would agree. And it definitely is contingent upon the context where you're located, urban, rural, all that kind of stuff. But what I am feeling is, because we all remember 9/11 and all of that. And I certainly wasn't alive during the Second World War. My father was he was one of those guys who came back from the Second World War and went to seminary. That was his world. But you know, guys, in my experience is 9/11, we were going to take care of that. You know, we're going to send guys over there and we're going to take care of that. Remember George Bush stood there and said, you're going to hear from us. World War II, we won. I mean, we controlled everything. We can do anything. What's coming out of this is our illusion of control of our life is gone. And I think that's far, in many ways, that's a whole different part of people's psyche, that the sense that I can control my destiny is gone. I don't know. I mean, just the other day up here in St. Joe, Missouri, north of me, about 50 miles, there's 800 guys who work in a meatpacking plant. Over 400 of them tested positive, and not one of them was symptomatic. Now, you figure that. I mean, here are 400 people with no symptoms, but they can spread the disease. Any idea that we can have any sense of control in our life right now is gone. And so what an opportunity that is for us who know who is in control of everything, right? So I think it informs your preaching and your conversations. I think people feeling a panic, maybe not on the surface, some of them are on the surface, that everything we thought we knew, we don't know. And there could be another pandemic next year and another one. What if it's worse? And so I think our gospel message speaks right into the heart of that, that God is in, he is the only thing in control. And I think that has to, if you'll allow me, I don't mean to get all heavy on us, but I think sort of the superficial stuff we talk about sometimes, we just got to do away with that. And this is where people are thinking. They're frightened, they're uneasy, and we've got the answer. And this is a way for our, and it's a great opening for your, look, before your church members trying to talk about eternal things, people didn't care about that. They had a big screen TV. They were going to the Chiefs. They won the Super Bowl, whatever. You're going to have an easier time getting your congregants to talk to their neighbors about serious matters because their neighbors have been forced to think on those things. So I would want to give them some tools on how to engage those conversations and those kinds of things. So, yeah, but you all knew all that anyway, but that's just something I've been ruminating on.
Hey, receptivity is high, isn't it? It's high right now because of that uncertainty, Mark, like you're talking about. William, I know you have to get off the call, so I want to ask if you would maybe just share a concluding thought from you, but we're going to keep doing some Q&A with the rest of the guys here just for a little bit longer. But William, thank you for being with us today. And before you go, just maybe speak another word, a summary statement, and then maybe point us to some resources that you would recommend for us to look at.
Sure. First of all, thank you for being on the front lines. I don't know if I'm speaking for Jeff, but I feel like I'm in the cheap seats of the kingdom and you guys are in the hard work, and I appreciate you and pray for you, particularly those of you in a normal sized church. And just know that it's not lost on me how important this time is, both right now and eternally. I think if I could think a little bit forward, I would ask you guys, you don't have to think a year from now, 18 months from now, just think two or three steps ahead of where things are. And that may come down to, you know, I live in the staffing world. We help people find their staff. Like, we're starting to, so what are the new gifts that are going to be important in churches? How are you going to do your online service once you're back to normal? What staff person is going to take that? It can't be a volunteer that may or may not be able to show up. So just start to think about what your structure might look like going forward. I bet it's going to be different. I bet it's going to be better. But know that I'll be praying for you and can help you however you want. Resources, we've tried to step in and offer resources where we can. We've said this is a time to serve and not sell. So if you go to reopeningchurch.com, or if you're in a setting where there's schools, reopeningschool.com, that's where you'll find Dr. Moeller's talk, either of those places. And I think you'll find it very, very helpful. He's quite visionary when it comes to those things. So, yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
William. Thank you.